This is Cincinnati Edition on a Sunday morning. I'm Mark Purcell. Thane Maynard's guest this week is local birding expert and editor of Birdwatchers Digest, Bill Thompson III. His new book is The Young Birder's Guide to the Birds of North America.
All right, Bill Thompson, thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Happy to be here today, Thane.
Now, of course, it's springtime, and I know that you are busy as can be, because anybody who's a birder is going to be busy in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
But I called mostly today because I recently reread the great book that you edited with Roger Torrey Peterson called All Things Reconsidered, where he chronicled some of his birding adventures. And obviously, you know Roger well, and you can say what you want, but he's the man that built American bird watching.
That's for sure. I mean, we're all sort of walking in his footsteps and standing on his shoulders, you know, as birders and naturalists here in North America. And without him, who knows? You know, we still might be just shooting birds to identify them or taking pictures or something. He gave us the keys to identify things from a great distance, and we're forever in his debt for that. That's for sure.
Absolutely. And he was so beloved. I was amazed myself. You know, at our Cincinnati Zoo, we have an annual lecture series, and we've brought in, you know, Jane Goodall, E.O. Wilson, I mean, the most famous biologists in the entire world. The day, and now this is, you know, probably 15 years ago, that we had Roger Torrey Peterson, the auditorium, when he came in, a full house, 1,200, grew silent. It was like the Dalai Lama or the Pope had come in. They weren't cheering. They weren't standing. They grew silent out of respect. It was just amazing.
And, you know, Thane, when I first met Roger, it was at one of the Hawk Mountain anniversaries years ago, and I wasn't yet working for the magazine. I was working in New York at the time, and I drove down to be with my parents at this Hawk Mountain anniversary, and Roger was the keynote speaker.
Sure.
There was a line of people out the tent for this to get his autograph, people with stacks of guides, and he patiently signed everyone and talked with people. My dad took me up to introduce me to Roger, and, of course, my knees were knocking. He pulled me aside and took me out the back flap of the tent and said, "Hey, you've got young ears. I want you to listen to these katydids and tell me if you think they sound any different from the ones you have in Ohio." Well, of course, I didn't know from katydids. We stood out there talking about katydids. He was the most genuinely kind person, and he was absolutely able to relate to anyone who shared his love of the natural world. And, of course, he was legendary for his hearing right up until his final years. He had just legendary acute hearing and could hear, you know, the call notes of birds flying high overhead and things. But it was a moment that I treasure because here he had hundreds of people waiting to meet him and to get his autograph and glad hand him. And he took me aside and made a big impression on me.
Absolutely. I know the time that I met him and that we had him at our zoo, the line that I remember the most is he said to people, "Bird every bird.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just take them for granted. You need to look closely. You might find something you didn't expect, but also just don't take nature for granted."
Right.
And, you know, the other thing that really, really amazed me, he was toward the end of his life. He and Jenny came, and he was really funny. He told a couple of jokes. I mean, I was just rocking. I couldn't even believe his personality.
Yeah, he was a good guy, and I'm honored to be a newly elected member of the board of the Roger Torrey Peterson Institute. So we're doing everything we can to carry on his legacy and his good work. And, of course, a lot of that involves reaching out to teachers and to young people. Of course, the reason for starting the Institute was he really wanted to teach the teachers because his life was changed when his teacher in grade school took him out and showed him the natural world. And he became enthralled at that moment, and that's the rest is history.
Exactly. Now, tell us a bit about what you're up to. I know famously you edit and publish Birdwatchers Digest. Tell us a bit about your work.
Yeah, the magazine's still going after all these years. We'll be celebrating our 35th anniversary this September. We started in my parents' living room here in Marietta, Ohio in 1978, shortly before I came over to your part of the world to go to Western College at Miami University.
There you go.
But we're still going, and actually probably have more readers of our website and our various digital things now than ever before, and almost more than we have of the print magazine. And so that's going really well. We're doing a lot more events these days. We've just done an Optics Expo up in Columbus, Ohio. We're doing the Midwest Birding Symposium, and I continue to do a few books here and there on the side and travel around. I love getting out and going to festivals and going birding and, you know, calling that work. I feel like I'm really getting by on that one. But I feel very lucky to be able to get to watch birds or do something having to do with birds and nature every day. So I'm a lucky fellow in that regard.
Absolutely. And I know that both you and your wife, Julie Zickafoos, who's a renowned author in her own right, have had quite an impact nationally and internationally, not just here in Ohio. And in that process, through your work with the magazine, as well as you said with the festivals, it feels to me, and you tell me your experience, but that there is a growing interest in bird watching and in nature in general, but certainly in bird watching. And it's been heartening to me to see a growing interest in young people. I see a lot of very hotshot young birders out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Thane. And the neat thing about it is, of course, we all had our people that were mentors to us when we were first starting out and looking at the natural world, whether it be birds or butterflies or the stars or anything like that. But what we've been trying to do, Julie and I and our colleagues here at the magazine and our friends in the Ohio Ornithological Society, and we try to pay that forward and get other young people, give them the exposure to nature that that we got when we were younger. And that's something that means a lot to us to be able to do that. The neat thing, too, is there's so many more resources available to not just young people, but to people who are newly interested in the natural world. You know, when I was a kid, you couldn't go to the bookstore and buy a field guide. You couldn't go to the sporting goods store necessarily and buy good binoculars. And you certainly didn't necessarily know hundreds of other bird watchers at the click of a computer key. So there are a lot more chances for people to get connected these days, and I think that's a wonderful thing. The only thing I worry a little bit about is some of us might spend a little bit too much time doing bird and natural history stuff on our computers or our phones or our iPads, not enough time looking at the actual stuff. So I always have to remind myself, you know, every day, put everything down, shut it off, get outside and smell the air and listen to the birds.
Exactly. In fact, a renowned wildlife painter, John Ruffin, who lives in our region, say, gosh, John, you're almost 89 years old. To what do you credit, you know, your great vitality? And he says, well, every single morning I get up, put on my boots and walk 5 miles outdoors.
Yeah.
And he's done that as long as I've known him. I've been with him overseas. I've been with him in New York City. He's like, come on, man, we're going to go out for an hour. Mm-hmm. And that idea of just starting the day, looking at what's out there is a great way to start. But wherever it is people live, they have a chance to see things. I know listeners in our region that are hearing this may or may not know, but there are terrific on-roads. If they're listening saying, gosh, I wish I could get my family, you know, more aware of bird watching. Obviously, some great places like Cincinnati Nature Center, just renowned birding trips, mm-hmm. local and national forever. But, you know, through the county parks in the county that folks live in, Southwest Ohio has a long history of natural history study all the way back to Audubon once lived here. So,
oh, yeah.
There's lots of opportunities here in Ohio.
That's true, and getting better all the time. There are all kinds of events going on all the time. There's a, you know, Ohio's really rich with bird clubs and nature clubs, most of which do outings, and almost I've never met a bird club that didn't welcome new members or people who just wanted to come and try it out. You know, there's you don't have to be an expert to be a member of a bird club.
You know, and that's an important thing for people to hear, because sometimes people will be intimidated. You know, you might go mm-hmm. somewhere, say Cape May during fall migration, and you've got some pretty serious birding horsepower standing next to you at the Hawk Watch.
Mm-hmm.
But with local bird clubs, local bird opportunities, just like any organization, there's a bell curve. There'll be a few people that are great, but there'll be a few people that are just trying to get going. So often be quiet, pay attention, listen carefully, and you'll be surprised how fun it can be to learn a new bird every time you go.
That's absolutely right, and I always encourage people to get out and not be shy. That's the three rules when I lead a bird walk. Number one, have fun. Number two, ask questions. If you don't know why we know that's a Cooper's hawk flying over, why that was a pileated woodpecker drumming, feel free to ask. There's no such thing as a silly question. And number three, remember rules number one and two. I encourage people not to be shy, because that I remember being shy as a kid. I mean, the month I got my driver's license, I drove over to Cape May Bird Observatory and banded hawks with all those, you know, the Pete Dunne and all those guys that were doing the Hawk banding back then. And, oh, man, it was really, really nerve-wracking because I didn't know anywhere near the stuff that they knew. But over time, I got more and more comfortable, and then I realized, these hot shots are just like you and me, and they make bad calls, too. And it's the rare person who's not friendly to someone who's interested in birding.
Well, Bill Thompson, thanks for the work you're doing, and thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Hey, Dan, what a pleasure. I really appreciate your asking, and happy spring to all, you and all your listeners.
My guest has been Bill Thompson, editor and publisher of Birdwatchers Digest. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Thane Maynard.